Good morning. This is Sunday, July 13th, 2014. We are studying the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks from the book Consciousness Transformed by Joel Goldsmith. These are the chapters he said must be assimilated if you want to rise out of metaphysics into the mystical consciousness. Metaphysics, of course, being the principles you apply in order to change your life, and mysticism, of course, being resting back in the Word and allowing the Word to form itself. There's a difference. So, if you are so inclined to want to seek further than just improved humanhood, then this study is for you. And after today's chapter is Two Covenants, given on September 28th of 1963 in Honolulu. After today's chapter, there are two left. There is September 30th, there is September 29th, the day before that. A talk was given on spiritual discernment, which is really good. And then the next day, September 30th, there was a talk given called An Eternal Relationship. And I believe that's where Joel was saying goodbye. And you can feel it in his talk. And when the basic message is that you can always be one with his consciousness, even if he's not here. So that's a beautiful talk, too. And then there's one more I want to give, even though it's not a part of these talks, which must be assimilated. I still really feel it's necessary, and that's on February 15th of 1964, just 4 months before he passed on into the other realm, and it is called Into the Mystical Consciousness, and I really like that. So I think I'm going to give that one, and then we may do an overview. I don't know. We'll see. So that'll be that, and that'll be the end of this study. But for today, we're talking about the two covenants. Now, let us digress here and go over to the Thunder of Silence, which he has a chapter called The Two Covenants. And he begins it with Galatians 4:22-26. This is Paul. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory? Now there you go. For anyone that says that the Bible must be taken literally, here's Paul saying this is an allegory. This part of the Old Testament is an allegory. So he says, which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which genereth to bondage, which is Agar. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. And so you can see there, Abraham had two sons. One was from the bondmaid and one from the free woman. And the bondmaid is that which is born after the flesh. And the free woman would be that part when John says, well, let's go look at it. Hang on. Okay, so this would be those who are born of the free woman. As many as received him, that would be the Spirit, that would be Jerusalem, which is above and is free, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born now not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. The glory is of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So, there are two covenants. One is born after the flesh, and one is born not of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And so he says over here in the thunder of silence, in our humanhood we are sons of the bondwoman, in subjection to the flesh and its claims, in bondage to the things, thoughts, and activities of the flesh, whether it be flesh of the body or the flesh called money or other forms of human living. Living in and through the flesh, as the offspring of the bondwoman, we are under the laws of matter, the laws of economics, the laws of race, religion, nationality, under the covenant which gendereth to bondage. The other covenant is that of our spiritual adoption, which comes through a conscious activity within our own consciousness, and at a time when we are prepared for that transition. Because the transition from humanhood to spiritual sonship is made only by grace. And that's what we're talking about, the two covenants. We're talking about moving from metaphysics into mysticism. We're talking about moving out of humanhood and wanting to improve it, coming up with some formula or prayer or affirmation that will improve our humanhood, coming out of that into the mystical consciousness where the Word is made flesh and dwells among us. And these are the two covenants. And here we stand. And are we ready to make this transition? Are you ready to make this transition? Am I? I say yes. I say yes. What do you say? And if you say yes, then you must do what was said at the beginning, and let's refresh our memories on that too. Okay, this is Virginia Stevenson, and she says, Joel wrote to many of us that until we assimilated what was given in the lessons of July 14th through September 30th, he could not take us further into mystical awareness. The lesson of July 28 reveals two great principles. If practiced silently and sacredly, will release this world from domination of superstitions that have acted in human consciousness as law. All right, so that is why we are studying. We are studying so that we may assimilate these principles. Now, he'll tell you, I think, in this chapter, but I'll remind you before we get started that each one of these principles, it's not that you must read and study and think thoroughly through these chapters, these 16 chapters, in order to assimilate them. Oh, no. If only that was all it took, that would be great. But in order to assimilate these principles, you must take them one by one and put them into practice until you have made them your own. Then, you have assimilated. Well, you've ascended up over the mind because now you're practicing mysticism and not metaphysics. All right, so let's go into this chapter, Two Covenants, September 28th, 1963, Honolulu, Hawaii. There are two covenants, the human and the divine, the mental and the spiritual, and there is absolutely no way for the human being to pray to God or make contact with God. Now, the human being, he says, pay attention, the human and the divine, the mental and the spiritual. So the human would be the mental. So he's saying there is absolutely no way for the human mind, for the mental, to make contact with God. The only contact there can be with God is in silence, and that does not mean an absence of noise. It means the silencing of the human will and personal desire, or the mental. Spiritual silence, be still and know, has no reference to sound. Be still means to have no will or desire of your own. Keep your humanhood still, your mental activity still. And then be willing that the grace of God fill your consciousness. And how it will appear in the outer form, you will have no possible way of knowing. It really is a mystery. And how it is accomplished is an even greater mystery. I think he's making reference to that scripture, the mystery of God. Great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh. And that's the mystery to which he's referring. So, keep your humanhood still, and then be willing. Be willing that the grace of God fill your consciousness. How it will appear in the outer form, you will have no possible way of knowing. It really is a mystery, and how it is accomplished is an even greater mystery. Okay, so there is the entire principle. You could put all the books away if you could live by this one right here, to the point where it takes over. You would need no more. There would be no reason for books. You would have no purpose for tapes and talks, except to enjoy listening to someone else that has discovered what you have. Joel says on the next page here, when you go to God, it must be with no thoughts and with no desire. You go to God to attune yourself to God's grace, and whatever form it takes, that is what you must follow. Do you see how he's moving us away from knowing the truth with the mind to having this inner capital E experience? You can't approach these principles in this work unless you've worked up through the metaphysics of the message, which is why these people were invited, because they had worked through the principles and they were ready for this transition. He says, multitudes could be healed if the multitudes would assemble in the realization that the purpose of the assembling is to attune themselves to the Spirit rather than to a teacher. You must forget who the teacher is and come together regardless of the name or nature of the teacher. Not because you think a particular teacher is spiritual, but because you wish to attune yourself. Where two or more are gathered together in thy name, in thy nature, in thy grace, you will discover any teacher who has gone beyond the stage of praying for things, conditions, and persons will serve the purpose of bringing God's grace into visible expression. Remember this. Now, I don't take that lightly when he says remember. I put a little asterisk in the left-hand column there, and I underline what it is he wants me to remember. And then I try to practice the principle to the point where I can remember it without thinking. So here it is. Remember this. The human being receives no answer from God. The human being receives no answer from God. Now, who is the human being? What do we read up there? The mental. The mental. And so if you're praying with your mind, you can pretty much make up your mind that you're not going to receive an answer. Your will, your desires, your thoughts, your affirmations, your beliefs, your concepts, your mind must be surrendered in the act of prayer. He's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about the altitude and the attitude of prayer. But I wanted to point out something else, which this reminded me of. Now, I have here the handwritten notes, which were made in June of 1960 at the Hotel Wellington in New York by Joel. He was in his hotel room, and he was jotting down his thoughts before giving a lecture. And he started out by saying there are two secrets, and then he wrote over the two. He changed it into a four. There are four secrets the world does not know. And these are the people that have not yet made this transition, and you may be one of them. So you might want to pay attention if you're one of the ones that do not know the secret, these secrets. There are four secrets the world does not know. One, all evil has its rise in the universal belief in two powers. This belief operating as a universal mental malpractice. This we sum up as the activity of the carnal or mortal mind, originally called devil or Satan. So we have a carnal or mortal mind, a world mind, operating on the mental. And this mind is going to sit down and pray to God for things. Well, then there's no contact, is there? That's what he means when he says, remember this, the human being receives no answer from God. So that's the first secret. Evil and good comes from the universal belief in two powers, which is a mental activity. Two, this malpractice has no power in and of itself beyond that of tempter. But it operates as power, and he underlines that, as power, were not known and understood. So, if you are unaware that this belief, this mental activity, these images of good and evil, if you're unaware that they stem from this universal world belief in two powers, then this will operate, this mental activity will operate, this malpractice will operate on you as power. Oh yes, it definitely will have power. Because it's not known and understood. So what do we have? The human being receives no answer from God. And so there are four secrets. One, evil has its rise in the universal belief. It's a mental malpractice. That malpractice has no power other than temptation unless you don't understand it and you're not consciously aware of it. If you're not consciously aware of what you're looking at, then yes, it has power and it can kill you, the human being. Number three, further, the human seeing, good or evil, is the product of this universal malpractice or carnal mind. And now he's underlined this next part. And has no contact with God. All right. The human seeing, now that's not which part of the human seeing, just the evil? No. He doesn't say that. The good and the evil. All of it. Everything you can see, hear, taste, touch, or smell is the product of universal malpractice and has no contact with God. And is not under the law of God. So that's number three. Remember this. The human being receives no answer from God. Why? Because it has no contact with God. And finally, number four. Harmony of a permanent nature can only be attained as the spiritual self is realized through impersonalization and nothingizing of carnal mind. So, there are four secrets, but really there's five. He's going to give you one more. One, all evil, all good has its rise in the universal belief in two, God and or spiritual self and. That's one. Two, the malpractice is mental images have no power other than tempter unless you can't see them consciously. If you are not awakening and you are under their spell, then they have power, because the human being receives no answer from God and has no contact with God. And that's number three. The human being struggling under this as a power has no contact with God. And four, if you want harmony of a permanent nature, then you're going to have to realize spiritual self, by impersonalizing and nothingizing this carnal mind, this mental activity. And so we have here, he's trying to take the students above this mental activity. Okay? Which is why he starts out by saying, there are two covenants, the human and the divine, the mental and the spiritual. And there's absolutely no way for the human being to pray to God or make contact with God. And over here in 1960, he said, the human seeing good or evil is the product of universal malpractice or carnal mind and has no contact with God. But he ends this by saying, then there is another unknown that is responsible for world discord. And here it is, the fifth secret, which is the greatest of all. The secret of harmony is not in using power. You see, he was realizing in 1960, and he was going to tell the students, trying to tell the students, the secret of harmony is not in using power, not in using mental activity, which has no contact with God. It's not in using affirmations. It's not in using denials. It's not in using metaphysics. So he says, then there is another unknown that is responsible for world discord. The secret of harmony is not in using power, but in refraining from the use of power. Since omnipotence recognizes no power to overcome or destroy, the recognition of non-power establishes harmony in the human scene. Now, isn't that strange? There's nothing you can do to, as a human being, to bring harmony to the human scene. And yet, when you recognize that what you're looking at, the good and the evil, is just simply a temptation to believe in God and, or spiritual self and when you relax from that and rest back, and you understand that no mental activity, no power is the way, standing in that stillness, you become aware as harmony unfolds, as the word is made flesh, as spirit reveals itself. Now look, again, we have misunderstandings. I have people writing me that are misunderstanding. You're not going to God and tricking God. You're not saying, well, okay, God, I can't pray for my rent, but I'm going to be still and be quiet, and God, go ahead and manifest, and then peek around the corner and see if he's providing the rent. That's not what we're saying. It's not a tricky way to get God to pour something into your human life. And I know this is difficult to understand because it's not on a mental level. It's something that you have to experience. So the closest we can come is to point at the moon. And hopefully you'll look at the moon and not at the fingers pointing. And pointing at the moon, we say, the word is made flesh. Spirit reveals itself. But your mind interprets that on your level. So God is a spirit. God is light. And that's all. Infinite. eternal, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. You can't put that in your mind. Your mind can't encompass that. But when you look at it, when you experience that in your meditation, your mind interprets it. And you open your eyes, go about your business, and harmony appears. That's still not God. That's still your interpretation. And so that's the only way I know how to explain that. You're still not looking at God. When you experience supply appearing, or health appearing, or companionship appearing, that's not God. That's still the mind's interpretation. God is the invisible something out of which those appearances, out of which the forms are appearing. And so there's duality, world mind, world universal belief, the belief in two appearing as good and evil. Or above that is the universe of spirit governed by love, peopled with children of God. And in that universe, the Word is made flesh and appears as harmonious being, which includes supply, that's how the mind interprets it, love or companionship, and health of mind and body and soul. See, it's kind of tricky. And again, I'm reminded of Don telling me, you are going to have to learn how to stand up and sit down at the same time. And I'm reminded of Shakespeare, to be or not to be, that's the question. We have to be and not be at the same time. We have to be a beholder, a witness. We have to bear witness to this spirit forming itself. And yet, I live yet not, I Christ liveth. And yet there's still an eye here beholding Christ living. For a while it's real delicate, real subtle. So, getting back to the two covenants. Remember this, the human being receives no answer from God. My kingdom is not of this world. This has to be your major remembrance. Therefore, if you are going to God's kingdom, leave everyone and everything of this world out of your mind. Now, he taught us that in the Kailua study series. No answer to this. And if you must hang on to something or say something, then you can say something like, thy grace is my sufficiency within yourself. But only say it once or twice and then be still. We're not hanging on to anything. Otherwise, this scripture, thy grace is my sufficiency, would be God. And it's not God. He tells us that in the wisdoms. He's taking everything away. That's okay. When everything's taken away, then you automatically ascend. So he says, in the silent, consciousness is filled with spirit, and spirit is the substance of all form. Then you will find that the forms which are necessary to your immediate experience are revealed. God is spirit. And when you receive God's grace, you interpret it in the way you know and understand. Your need is always met at the level of your immediate interpretation. And it gives this example. Can you imagine God knowing the difference between a man's suit and a woman's dress? Yet, as we live in attunement to this withinness, somehow or other, the men receive suits and the women receive dresses. It is our interpretation of the divine grace that is unfolding. All right, now let's look at this. Now here is one of the disciples declaring what he beheld in the silence of his being. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart. Now, a high mountain apart, of course, is when you ascend up over the mental activity into the spirit, into that higher consciousness, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them. And his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias talking with them. So, if you ever get to the place where you look at your true identity without mental activity coming between you and it, if you look directly at it, you will see something that shines as the sun, white as light. And that would be spirit, your Christ identity. Now, that Christ identity that you go to, how in the world would it know anything about a bus ticket? I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't it? Yet, when you rest back in it, it provides everything you need. And so, if you need to go somewhere to give a talk, Spirit wants you to go, and the bus ticket appears right on time, without you even putting forth any mental effort, you can be sure that within yourself, resting in that light, in that presence, in that oneness, attuning yourself to the Spirit, to that light, it forms itself and appears as a bus ticket. That's the way your mind interprets it. You might say you're looking at divine light and stepping it down in the mind. You're slowing down the vibration. I don't want to get into a lot of that, but what I'm saying is what he's saying. Your need is always met at the level of your immediate interpretation. It is our interpretation of the divine grace that is unfolding. And so God does not send you a check, or a bus ticket, or a spouse. And yet, because of omnipresence, all of your needs are met right here. And by dwelling in the consciousness of oneness, by dwelling in the consciousness that's able to see mental activity, mental images have no power. Omnipresence is here and functioning quite well, and I rest in it. And the consciousness that is still like the stillness of a lake with, when there is no breeze, that consciousness is able to behold the Spirit. And then when you come back into your mental activity and open your eyes, it appears as your need fulfilled. But it's your interpretation of divine grace. You see that? It's a very strange thing. You cannot pray for things, ever. It won't work. That's a mental activity. And yet, by forgetting the things and turning within for the Spirit, seeking the heaven, the light, the consciousness, all things are added. They appear. It's very strange. You sit down and stand up at the same time. He says you must change your concept of prayer, and then you will find the way to bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. Humility, he says, is a recognition of the truth that consciousness is the source and the activity of all that is. Therefore, the part that we play in prayer is an attentiveness to consciousness, as if listening. That's quite different from uttering affirmations and denials and trying to know things. That's quite different from mental activity. Listen, what is it? Attentiveness to consciousness, as if listening. So that would be like this. And I guarantee you that's not a mental activity. He says, the consciousness which I am, expressing itself, reveals itself as harmony in any and every form. It's right from John. The Word is made flesh, and we beheld His glory. We behold His glory, full of grace and truth. That's not something that happened 2,000 years ago. That's a living experience right now, when we learn how to pray aright. And so, consciousness which I am, expressing itself, reveals itself as harmony in any and every form. The Word is made flesh. That's an experience right here, right now, for those of us in the mystical consciousness. Prayer, he says, which is without desire and without anything of a human nature, without a mental activity, is this listening or attentiveness to that consciousness closer to me than breathing. Now, this assumes that you have practiced meditation to the point where you have made contact with that higher consciousness, not the mind. Since I am listening, I will hear the still small voice, or I will feel the presence. In some way, I will usually know when the contact has been made. It is the attitude of listening that establishes the contact. And I can tell you, listening has nothing to do with your physical ears. It's an attitude. Please hear this word. He's going to use it a lot. It's an attitude. The attitude of listening establishes the contact. If for a period of time you will have 10 to 15 to 20 or 30 periods a day when you turn within with the listening ear, you will eventually find yourself in a state of consciousness in which you do not have to turn within and listen, because you are always in, you are always within. You will discover that people will write to you for help and receive it, and before their letters are in the mailbox. So, our work, I wrote here in the margin, the goal of meditation is the mind which is not mental, but the mind which is spiritual, or the mind which was in Christ Jesus. Our goal is not listening and hearing mental activity. Our goal is listening and feeling and perceiving and receiving impartations from consciousness. And now in this Kalua study series, he had us turning within, 12 times a day? For one or two or three minutes, and most of us felt that that was a little much to ask. Well, now he's upped it to 30 periods a day. And I guarantee you, he doesn't recommend this without having done it. So he's recommending 30 periods a day in which you turn within with an attitude of listening. An attitude. You're not getting quiet and straining your ears to hear something. It's an attitude of humility. I don't know. I don't have the answer, and neither does any of this mental activity. Let me be still, Father. And it's a listening. Our function is to be sure we do not have any illusions about going to God concerning anything that has to do with the material realm. Why? Because the material realm, these mental images, have no contact with God. Neither indeed can they. Now he says, as you have these 10 or 20 or 30 periods each day for tuning in to the activity of God, see, you're tuning into the activity of God. Then the activity of God makes whatever adjustment is necessary in your life. Sometimes you do receive health, supply, employment, or happy relationships. But that is because you did not go to God for health, supply, employment, or happy relationships. Isn't that strange? There it is. There's the standing up and sitting down at the same time. There's the to be or not to be. Right there is the now you see me, now you don't. You receive health, supply, employment, and happy relationships because you're not going to God for health, supply, employment, or happy relationships. Stand up. Sit down. There's only one reason to go to God, he says, and that is for the experience of God. Then it performs its function and brings forth harmony into your experience, even though it is sometimes a complete reversal of what you had in mind. Oh, yes. That is for sure. And I can give you the example. An example. In 1981, I was all set to move to Hawaii. I had been there for a vacation, and I loved it. Particularly the island of Kauai, where I spent some time with Herb Fitch. And I really enjoyed the island, the people, the atmosphere, the feeling when I meditated. I enjoyed spending time with Herb, and I was going to move there. And it seemed that all indications were to go. I had talked to a director of a treatment facility for substance abuse. I was already working as a counselor for substance abuse, and this director, this executive director, was willing to go over there and start another facility. I had talked to a medical doctor whom I had introduced to the Infinite Way, and he was ready to go over there and head up the medical portion, and I was going to be in charge of the other counselors, and we were going to start this facility in Hawaii. And I was certain that that was what God wanted. And so the doctor flew over and he met with the hospitals there in order to see if we could establish a foothold and open a facility. And what we found was there was not much on that island, but that which did exist had only 3 days before made a deal with care centers, which were really big back then, who were going to open a facility. And so they beat us by 3 days. And I was somewhat disappointed. However, one of the people I met, which was going to come to work for me as a counselor, invited me to go to Florida. And so I went to Florida from California. I was in California, and I went to Florida. And I ended up living there for 15 years. That's where I met my wife. And we've been together for, next year will be 25 years. So you see, and then I was led through a series of coincidences and strange events here to North Carolina, where I've lived for the past 18 years. And so I have proof that you can think with your human mind, or you can have in mind the idea that you're going to Hawaii and end up in North Carolina. Now, that's the exact opposite direction. You learn to live trusting inner guidance. And even when the mind gets in there and colors it all up and says, oh, I see what you're doing now, God, I'll take it from here. Even when the mind gets a little carried away, that's okay. You continue to turn within, like he says here, 10, 20, 30 times a day. And then it performs its function, brings forth harmony into your experience, even though it's sometimes a complete reversal of what you had in mind. And so you learn to trust it and not any, well, not what you have in mind. So he says, this consciousness which I am, thou art, and it is because of this that one with God is a majority. One in attunement with spirit within can bring peace and harmony to the entire community because the one that I am, thou art. Now I see that with the children that we work with. For those of you who don't know, we have been working with, as therapeutic foster parents, with children that have been abused for, well, I guess, 25 years for me and 30 for my wife. We have worked with over 101 children now. Maybe it's 102, I don't know. And these are very severely abused, angry children when we get them. Yet, just turning within 10 to 20 to 30 times a day, it begins to have a leavening influence. And so he says here, it can bring peace and harmony to the entire community, and it can bring it to your house. It doesn't mean that the children don't have issues that they have to work through, but it means that eventually harmony prevails. Now he says, it is only in the degree that we continue in our humanhood that we miss the full attainment of spiritual harmony. Yes, because what did he say at the beginning of this chapter? You remember? He says at the beginning of this chapter, there are two covenants, the human and the divine, the mental and the spiritual. And so the human is the mental. And so he's saying, it's only in the degree that we continue in our mental activity, thinking that that's prayer, that we miss the full attainment of spiritual harmony. Yes, because what we have is mental activity, and the Word is never made flesh. We do not rise out of metaphysics into mysticism, which is what he's trying to teach us, help us, guide us, point his finger to. All right, he says, prayer must be the inner desire for spiritual harmony, not human harmony. And I ask you, what is spiritual harmony? And if you are honest, you have to answer, I don't know. Because you don't. No, you don't. Spiritual harmony you only know by going within these 10, 20, 30 times a day and living life as a beholder. Not running anything, not in charge of anything, not taking the reins on anything. Simply going step by step as a beholder and watching the invisible as it forms itself. The Word is made flesh. So, he says, prayer is an attitude, and it has nothing to do with words or thoughts. It is opening yourself to God. So there you go. There's your cone for the week. True prayer has nothing to do with words and thoughts. It is an attitude of being a transparency. The attitude cannot be voiced better than, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. But these are not words. This is an attitude of humility. See, it's not closing your eyes and saying, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth, and repeating Samuel's words and thinking somehow that's the magic open sesame. No. The words have nothing at all to do with it. You must have an attitude of listening. It's an attitude of letting spirit flow. And it doesn't matter how you it doesn't matter how you enter meditation and end up in that listening, receptive, receiving humility. What matters is that you do. And so whatever words it may be, today speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. Tomorrow it may be, I have no idea, Father, show me. The next day it may be, I live yet not I, Christ liveth. The next day it may be, I'm a beholder. And actually this can happen all the same day, because you're having 10 to 20 to 30 of these short meditations a day. Joel says in this book, I think it's in one of these other two chapters we're going to cover, that he does not like long meditations. He likes these short ones, because long meditations can lead to mental activity and can lead to the occult, which is mental activity on a finer level. We don't want mental activity. We've had enough of that, thank you very much. We want the Word, the invisible Spirit made flesh, the infinite Holy Spirit made flesh. So, prayer is an acknowledgement that there is something above and beyond, yet closer than breathing and nearer than hands and feet. Prayer, when it reaches its highest point, is really an attitude. It is taking the attitude of being the servant, being the son. Both serve and both are obedient. The servant serves the master, and the son is obedient to the father. But the master and the father are one. Okay, it's an attitude of being a servant. How do you describe it? Our good friend Joe says it's fizzing inside. I like to say it's a movement of spirit, which I feel. Also, I like to say I feel the presence. I feel it's tingling. But also, I receive sometimes impartations, which I've shared with you, and which I write down in my journal when I receive them. But I don't share them right away. What matters is that you, the human, the mental activity, cease. You cease from man whose breath is in his nostrils. You cease from the natural man, from the human, who cannot receive the things of God, who cannot make contact, who has no contact at all. You cease from that. And in the ceasing from that, you are receptive. You are showing God that I am ready to be an instrument, a channel, a servant, a transparency. I'm standing still. I'm not showing you with words. I'm showing you in my attitude. And eventually it becomes a living attitude, an attitude living you. You are that attitude. You're always in, he says. You're always within. And then when you're a transparency, when you're a window, you become a beholder. You live life as a beholder. I live, but I watch Christ liveth. There is an attitude in which you have renounced human good and human expectancy. It is an attitude of renunciation of human desire. Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. No one knows what thy grace is. No, not until you behold. And I wrote here, you must not seek any healing, and yet healing will flow through true prayer. He says, you cannot be clothed upon with immortality while you are seeking more mortality. You know, God cannot be added to our humanhood. He's told us that all through the years of his teaching. And so nothing of an earthly nature can enter your attitude of prayer, or it will not be a high altitude. To be able to close your eyes and open consciousness to thy presence, thy peace, this is the correct attitude of prayer. It's an inner movement, an attitude. Then you become a beholder of life. That is another attitude, that of being a beholder. And so he says, get into the rhythm of being a beholder, and you will find that the Spirit fills each hour with its activity, its word made flesh. But unless you can believe that there is an invisible substance, which we call consciousness, and unless you can believe in an invisible activity of consciousness that is living your life, then there's no way to become a beholder. There is no way to become a beholder unless you can perceive that there is an invisible, an infinite invisible consciousness, which I am. And so that's why there has to be the preparation before we are ready to make this transition into the mystical consciousness, because you have to have made contact with it already in your meditation. Then you can take the next step and become a beholder and stop using activity, mental activity, to try to reach it or reach out to it or even reach into it. No, you don't have to work that hard. You have to rest into it with the attitude that you are a beholder, a servant, a transparency. When you can once feel or witness that there is an invisible something living your life and producing things in your experience which you could not have brought about yourself, you are living a life of praying without ceasing, because you're always looking over your shoulder to see what's taking place. Until you can perceive that there is an it, you cannot pray aright. And that's why he's saying, you, the people that he invited to hear this, these talks, and then told that they must assimilate them before they can go further into mystical consciousness, those people have already perceived an it. When you can close your eyes and know that there is an it, then you will discover that there are inner intuitions to follow and obey. Then all prayer becomes an attitude of listening, of letting, of watching, of beholding, because from then on it lives your life. It performs that which is given you to do. You see that? Finally, he says, when you are living the prayer of attitude, it fulfills itself. The same presence that makes the demand fulfills it. And then thy grace really is my sufficiency in all things. And that's how you know that you have found the prayer of attitude, because the presence that makes the demand fulfills it. All right, so this week's message is all about the two covenants. One is being faithful and loyal to mental activity or metaphysics, and that is bondage. That is what Paul calls bondage. But Paul also perceives a freedom, which he calls Jerusalem, which he says is above. That would be mysticism. That would be this prayer of attitude. You must look at this. Look at it deeply. I am. What is the prayer of just attitude? Not words, not thoughts. an attitude. And how do I assimilate that attitude? How do I become that beholder, that transparency, that opening? When I become that opening, I live as a beholder. I watch the Word made flesh, and I behold the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Yes, this is the only creation, not that other mental creation, but this Word, this wonderful, wonderful Word made flesh. And then I look, and behold, all things have come to me without any seeking, without any trying. I didn't seek any of them. They're the added things. And I declare, or I rejoice as I behold the glory of the Father, full of grace and truth among us. And so I invite you to do the same. Find the attitude of prayer, which is above words and thoughts, which is Jerusalem, which is free. And come and join us in this fellowship of the Spirit. And now, thank you so very, very much. Thank you.